listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live, Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill, Lago Mar, Texas City, right near the Buc-ee's. The food is fantastic. We are stuffing our faces. We are fat. We are happy. We're in the elements. It is beautiful outside, and we're overlooking this beautiful, I call it a beach. I call it a beach because I want to be broadcasting on a beach, and right now I'm broadcasting at a beach, darn it. But the grand opening of Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill, we'll be here until 3. Of course, Will House will be here until 6 o'clock. 1-9-4-4. I hate this logic. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there to start. Sorry, guys. Who cares about tomorrow? Take care of everything you need to do today. Worry about tomorrow on tomorrow. Okay, based on that logic, they should have went Christian Javier there in the fifth inning. Who cares about tomorrow? And after you're done with Javier, let's go Verlander. You know what else they should have done? Harper in the ninth inning. Framber Valdez should have been up against Bryce. Well, there wasn't the ninth inning. Up against Bryce Harper in the eighth inning because you shouldn't worry about tomorrow.
Throw Framber in the third. I mean, just air it all out. I mean, just go for broke in a game that you're already down. Yeah, I mean, that's the mentality everybody should have. That's why you would be killing Dusty. Maybe. I mean, unload every bullet in the chamber while you're down by multiple runs in Game 3 of the World Series. There's an intelligent concept.
We don't miss many opportunities to criticize Dusty Baker from noon to 3, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Dusty Baker's getting some unnecessary strays this afternoon. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. Let's get Chris in here. Chris, you're in the Hive for the Killer Bees. What's going on?
How you doing? I was just got to say, pitching-wise, all year long, y'all been talking about the pitchers. But if you don't hit, you're not going to win nothing. You got to get the crust hit. It's like when y'all say they were losing 4-0. Had two men on base. They had a chance. Didn't collect. Then it went 6-0. By the line, they don't hit. It don't matter about no pitching. Houston been having pitching for years. But if you don't hit no crust hit, you're not going to win nothing.
I get what you're saying about the clutch hits, but the fact of the matter is your pitching has to keep you in the ball game too. And, you know, the pitching has to give you the chance to have the clutch hits and to perform offensively the way you're talking about. I'm not denying the fact that the offense didn't do their job last night, and we mentioned it multiple times. They did not have the kind of game that you needed in a game like that or any other game to be able to keep you in or win you a World Series game. And that's all something that we all agree upon. But from a pitching perspective, yeah, we talk about pitching because good pitching gets out good hitting. And a lot of times when you're not hitting good, you do average pitching a favor to where they feel like they're good pitching. Our pitching did not keep us in the ball game. The Astros hitters gave Ranger Suarez the confidence that he was a better than average pitcher that could not be hit last night. That's a combination for disaster, and that's exactly why the game turned out the way it did.
I think Chris is right. I mean, you don't score any runs, you're not going to win, but you're also not going to win when your starting pitcher gives up 7. Like, both things can be true, yeah. And we saw both things come into play yesterday in Philadelphia. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRP listener line for Gary. Gary, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to say I mostly agree with you guys about Dusty. Game one, he clearly should have, you know, pulled Verlander earlier. Yesterday, it was kind of a tough spot. But I will say, number one, obviously the offense has to be better. But I feel like today should basically be treated like game 7. I'm not saying use Framber or Verlander, but he should have a really, really short leash. You know, if Javier is showing any type of shakiness, at least getting some guys ready, maybe the long guys, Urquidy, somebody. But the way he's been managing, I totally understand it because the pitching is our strength, but we really cannot afford to go down 3-1. So today I feel like he should definitely approach it differently and maybe not unload every bullet, but really be prepared to manage this game aggressively from a bullpen standpoint.
Well, I appreciate the call, Gary. Look, I think that this is all hands on deck right now because for a lot of reasons, you know, you're going to have Verlander in game 5. You're assuming that Verlander, good, bad, or indifferent, which he did even in game 1, he's going to give you at least 5 or 6. But you know what? It's a lot different series to manage when you're 2-2 trying to get it back to Houston with a lead than it is trying to stay alive in the series and give yourself a really good fighting chance by winning tonight. I don't think that he's going to have any kind of hesitation in terms of using the bullpen early tonight, but I think that as it relates to Christian Javier, he's been, you know, when, and it's the overused phrase, right, that they used with Suarez a lot about, you know, the steady heartbeat. His heartbeat never gets too fast. I think Christian Javier is the exact same guy, and I think Javier has a lot better stuff. I think Javier is a guy that you should expect is going to give you five solid innings or more, and I think that, you know, if they have a lead, I think he'll be more likely to unload a majority of the tank.
Yeah, they kind of, like, if you look at one game this playoff where Dusty's been pretty aggressive with the bullpen, it was actually the Javier game where he pitched against Cole, because Javier pitched really well. He didn't give up a run in that game, but he only went 5 1/3, and I think threw 82 pitches in that game. So, like, he was very quick to go to the bullpen. Now, there were some maybe some circumstances that played into that. Javier hadn't pitched in length in a while since the regular season, so perhaps that came into play there. But I agree with Gary. Like, tonight is as close to a must-win as you can have. I think that the Astros could, or they're capable of coming back from a 3-1 deficit when you have JV on the mound, when you have Fromber on the mound, and then probably, well, you know, whoever's on the mound in a Game 7. I think the Astros are capable of doing that. So tonight is not the must-win where their season is on the line, but it's pretty darn close.
Yep.
Tonight is critical. Tonight is very, very important. So I agree with Gary's point. Like, tonight is the night to manage aggressively with the bullpen. And part of the reason that they're capable of managing aggressively with the bullpen today was because of the way Dusty used the bullpen yesterday. He was able to save those guys. So I agree. Like, if you go – if Javier's in the fifth and he's about to go through the lineup for the third time and he looks like he's on the brink of being pulled from the game, you should probably go ahead and turn it over to the weapon known as the Astros bullpen.
Yeah, no question about it, because I think that, you know, you got the day off coming, and you know, I would believe that Stanek's going to be a guy you can go to tomorrow.
Even tonight, he threw 7 pitches.
Yeah, and you're right, and he only threw 7 yesterday. So you've got a guy that could be accessible yet again, and he's had no problems coming back, you know, 2 days in a row. Presley's the guy that had issues coming back 2 days in a row in the past, but he looked really good so far throughout the playoffs as well. I think all hands will be on deck tonight, and I think he'll use a majority of them, knowing Montero's hasn't had a problem coming back, you know, 2 days in a row. Neris can come back 2 days in a row, and you'll get to Game 5 and deal with that when the situation arises. But if Javier gives you a good outing, I don't think he'll hesitate to use as many guys as necessary to either keep you in or win you a ball game, knowing that you now are guaranteed to come back to Houston, where you wanted it to get to all along, and you could be in a position where of the driver's seat if you can get another one in Philly in Game 5.
I think that the inning mark that I want to see is 5 innings. Like, if Javier gives you through 5 innings, and I mean, hopefully you're winning, but at the very least still in the game, that's a win for the Astros, because then you have the bullpen of Abreu in this, or however you want to order them. But you have 4 guys for the final 4 innings of Abreu, of Neris, of Montero, of Presley.
No question. And I think the other thing that you said earlier, which is the huge benchmark people don't pay as much attention to, is it's more than just pitch count with guys when they're done. That third time through the lineup can be devastating.
Yep.
And as good as you can be the first 2 times through the lineup, there's a reason why you look at stats from pitchers across the league. That third time through, when guys have seen and know what you can do, they can tee off. It's a different set of circumstances, and the average for the hitters normally go way up. I think you just keep a benchmark as to when he gets ready to start that third time through the lineup tonight, and that's where you start making moves.
Especially for a guy like Javier, who quite honestly is a two-pitch mix guy. I know that he shows a change, but he's fastball slider.
Yep.
So the dude who's a two-pitch mix at third time through the lineup can be tough to navigate. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Back there now for Sam. Sam, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Sam?
Oh, thank you guys for having me. There's plenty blame to go around for last night's game, but you can go with McCullers, Dusty, the bat. But to me, it starts at the top. Now, Dusty knows you do not want to mess around with Bryce Harper. One man on, two man out, high fastball. And to me, you have to be prepared for hitters like they have. And for you to, you could at least walk the man and then go on to the next pitch, to the next batter. So, I don't know. It's just, they got to score points. You guys are exactly right.
Appreciate the call. Look, I think that you're on to something we haven't touched on yet either, and that is Lance McCullers doesn't have a below-average fastball. And, you know, John Smoltz set the table that Harper already knew going in that he should expect breaking pitches because lefties had seen like two fastballs all season long
postseason.
From Lance McCullers postseason. In the postseason. And again, last night, he only threw two fastballs to left-handed hitters. So he already knew he was looking for breaking pitches. The way to get Bryce Harper out is fastballs up, especially above-average fastballs, which the Astros have done during this series. I'm not opposed to walking him and living on Nick Castellanos and guys like that as guys. Make them beat me instead of Bryce Harper, the same way teams were looking at Yordan early after the Seattle series in the first two games.
For me, it's not in that spot, but you want to execute, right? Maybe you're nibbling, and if you walk them, oh, well. I'm not showing them the four in the first inning, but maybe nibble, and if you walk them, oh, well. Dusty's not calling the pitches. Dusty's not telling Lance McCullers to leave a breaking ball right down to one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. Dusty Baker's not even involved in the meetings between catcher, pitcher, pitching coach, the law firm of Murphy Miller, with Maldonado, the catcher, with the pitcher Lance McCullers. Dusty's not privy to that conversation. He's certainly privy, but he's not involved in that conversation. So Dusty's not to blame at all for the way that Bryce Harper was pitched to. As far as Lance McCullers versus Bryce Harper, quite honestly, it's not a great matchup. Lance McCullers, his fastball is at 93. It's a sinker. Lance McCullers' fastball up really doesn't exist anymore because he's trying to get the ground balls. That's why he throws a sinker for his fastball. So it's tough for him to live up in the strike zone with a sinker at 93. It is a bad matchup. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Just not their night for the Astros. Or was it more concerning the way that the Astros lost the game? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We are broadcasting live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City, right off the highway next to Bucky's. A beautiful day to be out here. The water looks, the water is crystal clear. It's awesome. Sunglasses on, which is always a good way to do a show. Food is great. It is a great day to be out at Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill, and you should be too. Come hang out with us. We'll be here for about another hour and a half or so. Wheelhouse will be taking over after us from 3 until 6 o'clock. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 3780. Does Maldi deserve any blame? He gets all kinds of credit for being such a great game manager. Does he deserve any blame here?
Who again?
Maldonado.
No. here's the thing. We overpraise, and that's fine, we overpraise Maldi for his all that he does behind the plate, managing the game, managing the pitching staff. You know, everybody's gone into detail, especially Carlos Correa, about the extra work he puts in on a daily basis, hitter by hitter. At the same time, he doesn't throw the ball. You know, it's not his responsibility to locate pitches where they need to be located. And Lance McCullers didn't have his best stuff. And just go back and look at the replay of the Bryce Harper home run and look where a breaking pitch ends up as opposed to where it should, because most of his breaking pitches end up out of the zone and end up in a position where even if they're hit, there's a reason why he doesn't give up many home runs. They're normally hit down on the ground or soft contact or not where it's going to do too much damage. That breaking pitch that he threw to Bryce Harper screamed hit me the entire way that after it left his hand, it sat up about belt high right over the middle of the plate.
Yeah, I don't give any blame to Maldonado. You go back and look at all the home runs. They were poorly executed pitches. The first one to Bryce Harper was awful. The second one to Alec Bohm, Maldonado was calling for a backdoor, an outdoor fastball on the outside corner. He got it in on the wheelhouse. It was inside half, not where you want to miss with Bohm. Brandon Marsh, he was behind in the count 2-0. Lefty was sitting on the breaking ball. And then in the fifth inning when he gave up the home runs, just put the changeup on a tee for Kyle Schwarber and ask Kyle Schwarber to hit it as far as you possibly can. And I think it cracked the Liberty Bell.
I think
he did,
too, by the way, when you hit a changeup for 460.
That was on a tee. You can't blame Maldonado for poorly executed pitches. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, get Zach in here. Zach, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Zach?
What's up, guys? How are y'all doing?
Wonderful.
Good, man. How are you?
Doing all right. My question would be, I know you guys are really fired up about how people are, criticizing Dusty for, asking to go to his, the bullets, the main bullets.
Yeah,
my issue
plus
was
guys.
When you're going third time through the order and you got a guy like Lance, who, you know, he was struggling, he had some good innings, but he was struggling at the beginning. You know, in third time through the order, why not have somebody up? And I'm not saying go to your best bullets, but you got three guys that can give you some great and Garcia. And I mean, they brought in Urquidy, but it was kind of a little too late at that point. He still burned innings, which is great for the team. But I'm not saying waste your best guys, but you got three guys who are starters that can get you great innings. They've been good for the majority of the season. So yeah. Why not bring in one of those guys?
I mean, look, I said it. I said the one little nitpicky thing I would say about Dusty, because I'm not going to be as critical as everybody wants to be, and wants to hear everybody be about Dusty, is I would have had someone warming up, getting ready for the fifth inning, just in case.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm not going to fault Dusty for what happened last night.
I can understand that logic. I don't pull McCullers whenever they go to the fifth inning. He retired seven in a row entering the inning. He got the leadoff guy hitter. He got the leadoff guy in the fifth out. He retired eight in a row at that point. Now, if you do want to play the analytical game, to Zach's point, you know, you mentioned this a little bit earlier as well, the numbers for offensive players skyrocket the third time they're able to see a pitcher. So that should be in the back of your head if you're managing the game. That should be in the back of your head if you're Dusty Baker. It doesn't all fall on Baker, too. He's got the help of Miller. He's got the help of Murphy. They can be like, hey, Dusty, look, Schwarber's about to be on deck. Maybe it's going to be the third time true. Maybe we have somebody up just in case he gets into a little bit of trouble. So I can understand that. To Zach's point, too, like, don't use the plus guys. Like, that to me would be the answer. If you're going to pull McCullers there, that's the path and the avenue that you go down. You're not turning to Brian Abreu in that spot down by four. That is a luxury that the Houston Astros have. Their minus guys, their low leverage guys are still very good. We saw what Jose Urquidy did yesterday, three shutout innings. We know his success in the postseason. I don't really want to use Will Smith ever unless it's mop up duty.
No, but you were spot on. I was just going to give you credit for that because of the fact that you mentioned it, Schwarber. Will Smith would have been a perfect guy to burn there just because you probably in any kind of game that is within reach, you're not going to use him.
Yeah.
But lefty against the lefty, let him have his best chance at him and do the same kind of things to where you stay away from your high leverage guys. But you got a guy that knows how to pitch these guys. Whether he executes it or not, it's a different story. But at least you've got an experienced veteran guy that knows how to pitch these guys, was in the same division as them. Lefty on lefty, take your chance.
I don't like it 4-0 once it's 7-0. Like, I'd rather have seen him instead of Stanek once it got to that point. Now, if you want to have somebody up and ready to go for the third time through the order, I can understand that. But Lance was cruising. I mean, Lance, he got hammered yesterday. He had retired eight in a row. Like, that is in the back of Dusty's mind, too. And he wants to give a pitcher who's retired eight in a row a shot. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. That game yesterday, was it one of those games where it's just not their night, or is it concerning that it was that type of loss?
I just think, to me, you always have to have some concern when you're dealing with the World Series and every loss matters. But I think it just wasn't their night, and I think that it was self-induced in a lot of ways because of the fact that they changed their focus at the plate once they got down. When they saw that it was starting to pile up, that, you know, they changed it even more, kind of swung it a little bit more desperately, weren't as patient at the plate. But I would just chalk it up as it wasn't their night. It wasn't McCullers' night for sure. We know that. The offense had an off night. But you look at it and say, this team could easily be up 2-1 in this series if they didn't blow a 5-run lead in game one and the way they came out in game two. So it's not like they've been just absolutely dominated for three straight games. It just wasn't their night last night, and you take your chances that they're going to come back, which they've shown that they've a propensity to be able to do, to turn the page, to forget about the game the night before, and to focus tonight. If they come out of the gates hot again quickly, I think all will be forgotten, and you'll be in a series that you still believe you can win.
Even after game three, like we're the day after game three. We're right on the heels of game three. Certainly you're not happy about ever losing a game in the World Series. I'm still more bitter about game one than I am game three. And game three was yesterday. I'm more frustrated. And probably losing game three adds to the bitterness that I have of game one. I am far more upset today.
Totally understandable.
Day after game three, a loss in the World Series where you're down 2-1. I'm still way more upset about game one than game
three. Totally understandable. You got your ass handed to you last night. And there's nothing you can do about it because there's nothing you did. You didn't do anything about it then. So there's no need to worry about it now because you didn't have a fighting puncher's chance to come back and do the things that you did. You got used because you never scored a run. But when you look at game one, you had a 5-run lead. You were in total command of that game. You had everybody believing hey, they have set the tone for this World Series, and they are dominating right from the jump in Game 1 of the World Series. And you let it slip through your fingers. And even as they started chipping away, you still had opportunities to where you could still keep a stranglehold on control of that game. And you didn't, and it slipped through your fingers, and then it became anybody's ball game. And at the end of the day, after becoming anybody's ball game, it was a ball game you ended up losing, and that became a big problem. I'm totally with you. I still, and I don't want to have this after the series, but I still lose sleep thinking about Game 1.
I won't forget it unless they win the World Series, if I'm being completely honest. That's going to be the one. That's going to be the Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, that moment when Hinch didn't go to Gerrit Cole, went to Will Harris, gave up the dong. The way that I would answer this question, and I'll say it again, it's just not their night for the Astros. Like, people, like, you lose 7-0 in the middle of a regular season, just not your night, tip your cap, move on, play the next day, which the Astros have that attitude. That's the way that they're going to act. What is concerning about it to me, though, it's 50-50. Like, I'm willing to just throw out the pitching side of it, the 7 runs, because they were all on McCullers. I think if McCullers pitches again in the series, he's going to have things figured out. I don't think he'll be tipping like he did in the first 2 innings. I think he'll have a better game plan than he did yesterday, obviously. The Phillies were all over him. They knew what was coming, whether he was tipping or whether he wasn't. The Phillies had the game plan for him. Where it's concerning for me, though, is the offensive side of things. Because when you look at the Phillies and you start to rattle off the pitchers that you enter the series as, like, weapons for them, it's Nola, it's Wheeler, it's Alvarado, it's Sir Anthony Dominguez, it's David Robertson. You know how many of those guys they used in yesterday's game? Zilch. None of them. You got shut out by Suarez, Brogdon, Gibson, Nelson, and Bilotti.
Sounds like a law firm.
Yeah. Bilotti sounds like a golf ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, those are the dudes that shut you out. So the pitching staff, I'm willing to just kind of wash your hands. One of those days, they had a game plan. You might have been tipping. Go figure it out. Poorly executed pitches, blah, 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 blah. The offensive side of the equation, though, is the one where I'm like, man, is this Bagwell Biggio? Man, are the Astros' bats just going to disappear again in the playoffs? The one side for the Astros this year, I think the Astros' offense was underrated this year, but between the two things, offense, pitching, pitching was the strength. So the fact that you get shut out by those 5 dudes – that's cause for concern.
We'll see what happens tonight, right? Your best offensive lineup should be tonight no matter what, because Vasquez is going to be the catcher for Javier, you would assume.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, no matter what he does a designated hitter, you know, you have Vasquez in that lineup, which I think is a huge plus for this team. I don't think Bregman, you know, is going to have an off night tonight, and we'll see. But I think Altuve has got it figured out. Pena's worried me a little bit in this series, but I think Pena's going to be just fine. Yordan's the guy. Like, for as much as he got off to a start, the start that he got off to in the Seattle series, and everybody said you can't pitch to him the rest of the playoffs, yeah, he obviously has cooled way off, and he's a guy you desperately need. The way Harper has carried the Phillies, he's fully capable of carrying the Astros. You don't need him to carry you, but you need him to be a factor. And right now, he's not been a factor.
I don't even need – yeah, to me, just kick the can down the road. Don't swing at bad pitches.
Right.
Don't get yourself out. If you just got to get on base, just get on base.
Well, like the first at-bat, at least he worked at, you know, six or seven pitches before he made an out. At least he's – and it's, that's a constructive at-bat, as opposed to sometimes where it looks like, you know, he's just – he's not putting a whole lot of effort into it.
0-8-3-0. Mattress Mac showed more fight last night.
Did you hear about
the
that?
Astros. I saw it. I saw a video of it. Yeah.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Mattress Mac saves you money and cusses you out in the streets of Philly, right there on Broad Street. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. This is the second time in the World Series that entering the game, it feels like a must-win for the Houston Astros. Let's power rank the pitchers you want starting and what feel like must-win games. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees are live at Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill. Larry, our guy who lives over here in Lago Mar, swinging on by. Nice to meet him. And he lives over here in this area. He didn't even know this place was open yet. It is the grand opening. Food is fantastic. Beer specials for their grand opening. It's Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Lago Mar in Texas City, right next to the Buc-ee's. We'll be here for another hour and a half. Wilhouse will be following us up from 3 to 6, leading into Astros-Phillies Game 4 World Series coverage tonight, the national broadcast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Second time in this series, Blankers, that it feels like a must-win. Astros lose Game 1. You feel like you at least need to salvage the split before you head to Philadelphia. Now the Astros are down 2-1. You have a game tonight where you're trying to avoid the 3-1 deficit. 3-1 deficit, you give the Phillies three shots to win one game, and they celebrate a World Series championship, and you lose three straight World Series titles. It's not a must win by definition. It's as close to it as you can possibly find for the second time in the series. Power rank the starting pitchers that you trust the most in these type of games. Astros have four of them right now. What will those power rankings be?
Well, I think for me, it's pretty simple. I think Fromber, the way he's pitched and the way he pitched all year, I think Fromber's my one. I think Javier's my two. I think Verlander's my three. And I think McCullers is my four. And, you know, I would be a lot, have had a lot different mentality about three and four had they done a little bit better in the playoffs so far to this point. But they are who they are at this point. And therefore, I'm going with the guys that, you know, have done it and have proven that they haven't fallen off a cliff since we got out of the regular season. So that's the order I'm going with. I'm sticking with it, and that's my story.
Power rank the pitchers you want starting in these type of games. I guess you can even go outside the box. You could throw Luis Garcia into this conversation. You could throw Jose Urquidy in this conversation. If you're power ranking the pitchers you want starting in these must-win type games where you feel like it's a must-win, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780 3776.
This is the moment where you regret trading Jake Odorizzi, right?
Get out of town.
Shut up.
Delete
no.
your
Shut
account.
Mouth.
This
no.
is the last
Shut
time you
mouth.
Speak on our radio
well,
program
yeah, this
today.
Is not a doorbell that you can chime in on, sir.
I just remember
Jake Odorizzi.
I just remember there being some freakouts about trading depth starting pitching. I thought this was maybe the
they
moment
still
that
have
you
plenty
wanted.
Of depth of starting pitching. You need quality right now, and the guys that you believed were quality haven't been quality in the playoffs.
The Astros have three starters in their bullpen better than Jake Odorizzi.
Correct.
In their bullpen. Better than Jake Overeasy. Hunter Brown, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia. If I'm power ranking these, I can't disagree with Fromber. Fromber right now is the guy that you trust the most. He's been Mr. Consistent all year long. The quality start tour. And then he's also been good in the playoffs.
Yep.
That's the kicker. Because Justin Verlander had a better regular season than Fromber Valdez, but he hasn't had a good playoff. So right now, your confidence level is higher with Fromber than it is JV. Number two is hard for me. Number two is hard for me because Christian Javier had an unbelievable regular season. He has made one start this postseason and was nails, right? He went 5 1/3 shutty in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium, and he did it against Gerrit Cole. Like that means something that Christian Javier was able to do that against the Yankees. I don't know. Maybe it's loyalty. Maybe it's appreciation to the career of Justin Verlander. I know Verlander's playoff numbers. Mm-hmm. I know Justin Verlander's struggles in the World Series. It almost sounds sacrilegious in the baseball world if you say that you trust Christian Javier more than Justin Verlander. I struggle with it. I'll be honest with you. That's a hard question for me. And I know the struggles of JV. I know the brilliance of Christian Javier. We've been on it from 2 years ago, the COVID year with Christian Javier. I think I might go Javier. I think I might trust Javier more than Verlander.
I mean, the bottom line to me is you don't get a ring for a resume. And the fact is that maybe it's because they haven't seen Javier as much as a guy like Verlander, who, with these guys being on other teams throughout their career, have had plenty of times to cross paths with JV. I don't know what it is, but the fact that he was so lights out the first time through the lineup and then so the polar opposite the next time through the lineup to give up all that he gave up and give up a full 5-run lead – It's deeply concerning, not to mention the fact that you can't forget what happened in the Seattle series and the fact that even against the Yankees, he settled in finally to put up good numbers if you just look at the stat line. But he didn't start off well, and he didn't give you that confidence you had all year. Oh, who's on the mound today? Oh, JV, that's a W. That's basically you can book that. I don't feel that way right now, so that's why, for me, it was easy to say Fromber, Javier, then JV, and then McCullers.
Do you feel that way about Javier?
I feel like, you know, it's not just what I see and how I feel. I feel like everybody you talk to and you hear quotes from say that just the way he has the great differentiation between his fastball and his slider, the way that he locates pitches, you know, his strikeout rate. I feel like more and more every day I'm getting on the bandwagon of this guy is a premier pitcher in the waiting and that this is a guy that I have total confidence in.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. John, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, John?
John, go.
Maybe he's on the John. No, maybe. John. We'll try to get John on a little bit later. Do any of the other starting pitchers in the bullpen jump either Verlander or McCullers, you have 3-4 in your confidence, because I don't think that's going to happen in the rotation.
It's not going to happen between now and the end of the World
Series. Do any of the starters, would you have more confidence in any one of the three, Brown or Keeney Garcia, than let's start with Lance McCullers?
I think the only one that I would really feel like in that conversation is Garcia, because of what he did against Seattle and the fact that, you know, it's not like he hadn't done that before, giving up a solo shot.
Yeah.
But he is a guy that has good major league stuff. He's got out pitches. I think he's got an above average fastball. And I don't think Hunter Brown, he could get there. I don't think he's ready for this yet. So I think the only one in consideration for either one of those guys would be Garcia. And even with that being said, I don't think I'm doing that, because if Lance gets another start, it's at home. I know he'd be in his comfort zone. I know that weather's not an issue. I know that, you know, he can do through everything to his routine. He can do everything that he's going to do. The big thing for me is he's got to spend some time, whether in the media he denies it or not. They've got to make sure that he's not giving them an advantage the next time he faces them.
Yeah, McCullers after the game was talking about that, and I think I respect this about McCullers. McCullers just owned it.
He owned it. Yep.
McCullers just said, look, Tippett, I'm not allowing that to come up in this conversation. They whooped me. I got beat. We got beat. I appreciated that, actually, by McCullers. Don't have an excuse for a poor performance. I do think he was tipping in the first couple of innings. I like that he didn't go there.
I like that he owned it.
Lance a lot of times has excuses, yes. And yesterday, no, I just got beat. They hammered
I like me. He owned it, but Jeremy, all I'm saying is whether, you know, he handled the media correctly, now handle everything else correctly. Get in the video room, look at it over and over again. Not that you have to make any pitches, but just from the standpoint of going through your delivery, figure it out with the leg kick, where the glove placement was, whatever it is, so that, because you know that if he's the Game 7 starter, whether he figures it out or not, they believe that they got something on him, that they own him, that they welcome him to be the starter in a winner-take-all game.
Yeah, if any of the bullpen guys were to jump, none of them are going to jump Verlander for me, and I know Verlander's been bad in the playoffs, but it's still Justin Verlander, and you think that Justin Verlander at some point is going to figure it out, get his little World Series bugaboo, you know, off of him, get that little hex off
and
of him.
And remember what was it Nightingale said? His second start in the World Series is always much better than his first start. That's just an extra tidbit to keep in mind.
I meant to fact check that. I never was able to fact check that. The only one that I would have a conversation about, bullpen guy over the starter. Look, a lot of people love Jose Urquidy. Jose Urquidy looked really good yesterday. Jose Urquidy's had good World Series performances as well. I'm not sure I'm going to go Jose Urquidy over Lance McCullers in my confidence. I like Luis Garcia, though.
Me too.
I know he gave up the home run early in this series, game one, but Luis Garcia finished the season so strong. People, like, he had a little bit of a lull there where he was kind of shaky. People were talking about him not being on the playoff roster and all of this stuff. He finished the season really strong. He was unbelievable in that long appearance that he had against Seattle. If I were to go any of them, I would go Luis Garcia over anybody else in the bullpen.
Yeah, that's we're on the same page. That's also my thinking. Not that they are going to do that at all, but if they did, he would be the guy, and it would be for a Game 7, and that's why I don't expect to see him in a relief role leading up to a Game 7 unless, you know, it looks like the Astros have a chance to seal the deal prior to that. I think that they're going to keep that bullet in the chamber saved for the fact that if there's a Game 7 and you have any doubts about Lance McCullers, you have a guy that most teams don't have waiting in the wings.
Yeah, that'd be a whole staff day, I think. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Real quick on Verlander, to back up Nightingale's point, back-to-back starts in a World Series. He did it in 06 when he was a rookie, gave up 6 runs, 7 earned, and 5 innings in his first World Series start. His second one, he gave up 3 runs, 1 earned, and 6 innings, so that checks out back in 2006. 2017 with the Astros, 3 runs over 6 innings in his first World Series start, 2 runs over 6 innings in his second. I mean, pretty close, but that checks out. And then 2019, he gave up 4 runs in 6 innings, and then his second start, 3 runs in 5 innings. Again, about even. So, checks out-ish, especially in his rookie year. 713-780-ESPN. Skiller Bees broadcasting from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my friend Doc Linville. Look, I've been just bragging about Doc Linville for the last year or so, and it's ever since I had the NeoGraft procedure, and you've heard us all talking about it because it works. The NeoGraft procedure isn't all these fake procedures for your hairline that just cover up and mask the problem, the sprays, the creams, the foams. It's taking your own hair where you have a lot of it, and genetically, you're never going to lose it on the sides and the back, and moving it to where you need it most. A lot of times, you have a baboon's butt showing on the top back of your head, or your forehead is turned into an 8 head, and you don't think there's anything you can do about it but shave. Nope. They have the answer with the NeoGraft procedure with Doc Linville. And because you're a listener of ESPN 97.5, you get a deal that no one else gets. And that means if you go to 975hair.com, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. But for you as listeners to the station, you can go in, have all your questions answered, and figure out if the procedure's right for you too. Granato did it. I did it. Jake did it. Fred Fowler did it. Be the next in line to reap the benefits of the NeoGraft procedure. 95%+ success rate of all follicles moved. Stay, grow, get stronger and longer, and will be there for the duration of your lifetime. That's what got me going. That's what convinced me to do the procedure. You can check it out, too. 975hair.com. Go see my friend, Doc Linville.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Blue Lagoon Bar and Grill in Texas City. Food is fantastic. Grand opening. They have beer specials, $2 canned beers, $3 canned cocktails as well. We'll be here until 3 o'clock. The Wheelhouse will be here until 6 o'clock. Have you seen what Elon Musk and Twitter is doing a little bit?
This $8 a month thing for the blue check mark?
I saw it first at $20 a month, and then I guess Elon tweeted at somebody and said $8 a month. A lot of people are going a little bit nuts about this. I think people are overreacting to all of this. I think people would pay the $8 a month for Twitter verification. What are your thoughts on this? Because I have an unpopular opinion here. I think Elon Musk doing the right thing, membership to the
blue check. I think everybody's looking at it like he's trying to make his money back. I think that, you know, it just depends case by case. The blue check mark's not that important to me because I'm not that important. I think that when you are people that are of a certain, you know, whether it be in entertainment or otherwise, you know, even in the media, and you got to make sure and you need verification to make sure people know it's not from someone claiming to be me, it's me. It means more to have the blue check mark. It's you know, the whole internal struggle people have when they haven't gotten that in the past, I think has gone way too over the top for me. But I think I also understand it that some people need it. I just don't think you should have to pay for it.
I am important. I do have a blue check mark. I wouldn't pay a dime for the blue check mark on Twitter. I wouldn't pay a dime for the verification. I wonder if some people would.
Did you apply to get verified?
No. No, I knew a guy. It's like, I'm going to take care of you. And
oh, okay.
He did it.
There you go.
Yeah, I didn't. I couldn't care less. I wouldn't pay a dime for it. Literally
either.
A dime.
Me either.
For it. 713-780-ESPN. How much would you pay
Jake,
for this
Jake
blue check mark?
Jake paid for two, didn't he, Andrew?
713-780-3776.
Is that true?
I don't know about all that.
You know,
you don't know if he paid for two?
Here's, he would.
I actually think that it makes sense, though, to make people pay for their verification on Twitter. I think that it does add some credibility for, like, maybe not like Brendan says, like Adam Schefter. I think Brendan and I are going to argue about it here in a second. But where I think that it does come into play is like the second tier, the fringe national guys that'd be willing to add that for their credibility. I also Googled how many Twitter like blue check marks there are.
Yeah.
There's 300,000-ish blue check marks. I think the number would grow if you could buy it. But if you just use that 300,000 people, how many of those 300,000 do you think would pay 10 bucks a month?
Can I ask you a question on that?
How much of the 300,000 do you think would pay 10 bucks a month? Maybe like 10%?
Oh, I think more than that.
More than 10%?
Yeah,
let's just go
that.
Let's go conservatively 10%.
Okay.
So let's say 30,000 people are paying $10 a month for their blue check mark.
Yeah.
That's $300,000 a month. Look at that over a year. Elon Musk makes $3.6 million just by that simple change.
See, Jeremy and I got into this a bit yesterday before the show. Or actually, I think it was in show, actually in a break. Here's my thing. I think the blue check mark, the people who need it the most, are people like Jeremy. And he's saying he wouldn't pay for it.
I don't need it. I would. Why do I need it? I don't need it. I couldn't care less.
What am I, chopped liver? It's just people like Jeremy?
Well, I mean,
I think you're in play here.
But Jeremy, you're the same. I mean, you and him are need it on the same level, is my opinion.
Why?
Because the big national people are established. I agree with your premise that, like, the people who it doesn't necessarily come into play for, like, the top the top followed people. But if they're not, if they don't have the blue check mark, what is it? It's just
But if you can buy it, my concern is forever and a day when I worked in the NBA, there was Adrian Wojnarowski's account, with the Woj bombs, and then there was one that looked exactly like it that was not Adrian Wojnarowski that would pull
That's
the
true.
Wool over guys' eyes over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And if both can buy the blue check mark, it becomes increasingly harder to decipher which is the real Adrian Wojnarowski.
That's true, it does.
So that's where I would say that, you know, it shouldn't be that easy either. I still think there needs to be a verification process so that, things are in place so that you don't get imposters.
I don't think he's going to allow the general public to do it. I think it's still going to be, like, verified-type people. I don't think it's going to be just Joe Schmo walking down the street. What I would say is that, like, I think companies are going to buy it for them. Like, I think ESPN would be like, yeah, we're going to buy Adam Schefter's. It adds some sort of credibility. The same thing across the board. So I think that most of those people that have it, I would say 10%, you think it's more, all of a sudden you're adding millions of dollars into the bottom line for Twitter.
It's
perfect
based
sense.
On what he paid for it,
he
though.
He paid $40 billion for it. Yeah. And you're losing credibility to what that means. I think it's insane.
You don't want $5 million a year?
Not
part of the investment.
Hey, and Branham, here's
you're
the
monetizing
thing. Let's think about this. You know, because he's a businessman too. You don't think he's going to do corporate deals with ESPN? We'll blue check mark all of your on-air talent for a certain price per month. And I'm sure that you get plenty of companies that are just going to write the check and say, there you go, because we need our people
marketing.
Verified. Yep.
Yeah, it's part of the marketing.
I think Twitter is so small, ultimately. Like, when you compare its user base to anything that, like, flirts with being a social media, it's really not that big. I don't think these companies are going to say we need blue check marks.
I mean, I think it's pretty cheap.
Certain media companies are.
You pay $10 a month for 100 people. That's $1,000 a month to big companies. That's nothing. It's just part of the marketing budget. You just move around
right.
a little bit of things.
And a lot of times they'll sponsor it.
Yeah.
They'll get sponsors involved in it. They won't even have to pay it out of the pocket. But it gives credibility and verification to the people that need it most, which are their frontline people that they want people to trust and go to.
0565 says it has nothing to do with the money. The reason he wants to do it, he said, is that it's the only way to get rid of all the bots. I don't know how that gets rid of all the bots.
I don't either.
What was the question you were going to ask a while ago?
Who, me?
Yeah, you said, let me ask you a question, and I interrupted you. And kept
I don't
going.
Remember. I don't remember at that point where
if,
it was.
If Elon does open it up to the general public, how much a month would you be willing to spend to have a blue check mark? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How much would you be willing to spend to have a blue check mark next to your name?
See, I also think that there are going to be plenty of individuals that are going to expense this anyway, too. I think that there's going to be plenty of individuals, whether their company does it or not, that are going to go to their company and say, hey, you hired me to do this job to be your beat reporter, to be your, you know, newsbreaker and big news yep. breaker. And with that, I need to have the verification so that people realize it's the right place to go to. You're paying for this.
B. Hannon on our Twitch says he would spend $4.99 a month to have a blue check mark, just like Twitch. I thought Twitch was free. 713-780-ESPN. How much would you, the average Joe, be willing to spend to have a blue check mark next to your name? Brendan, how much would you spend to have a blue check mark next to your name?
Nothing.
On Twitter?
Nothing. I'm not paying
so
for
it.
I think it's insane. I don't think any of our listeners are. I don't care what that one texter said.
Infuentes said he'd spend $10 a month.
Why?
Two people, one spending five, one spending ten.
My curiosity is why. Why is the average person buying that? What are you gaining?
Infuentes said he would do it just to anonymously post on Twitter.
Dr. Dre on 290 would take the 290 off and make everybody believe that he was a freaking musical genius.
Yeah, poor Marine says, I'm going to pay, no doubt.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't think he's even on Twitter.
Oh, yes, he is.
I think he was for a little bit, maybe.
Yeah,
he might have been on
then
for a little
bit.
Did
he get his marching orders?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who gave him the marching orders.
Joel, did you say you wouldn't buy it either?
No, I would not.
If none of us are buying it, it's very weird for me to understand who is.
I think some people will. I think we just described a bunch of people that
would. A lot
of
people think it's a prestigious thing. A lot of people need it
right.
for what they do.
It currently is.
Like, would Kim Kardashian buy it? Absolutely she would. It's part of the brand. It's part of the imaging. It's part of the marketing.
And it's peanuts for her, too, right?
Exactly.
I think that the other thing, and I'm sure you guys remember this, too, depending on where you were when Twitter became such a big deal, that was like an intense thing for a lot of people to find out how and why how to get verified, if they didn't, why they weren't, and they hadn't. I remember in the media room at Rockets games, people losing their mind about the fact that so-and-so has the blue check mark and I don't, and there has to be a way because I'm more important than this person. I'm like, really? Like, it's that important to you? Like, that's the kind of thing that keeps you up at night was that you don't have a little blue check mark next to your Twitter account?
I find it to be very absurd. I'm curious, too, Brendan, like, why you think it's important for, like, the local media?
Because what you're paying for is, one, you're paying for the sense that you're credible. Whether or not that's accurate, that is kind of what the blue check mark is, right? If you see an Adam Schefter tweet a trade and you see the blue check mark, you know it was him who said this. I know that I can trust him versus a fake account. But beyond that, what you're really paying for is you're paying to be boosted in the algorithm. And I don't think the generic Twitter user needs to be boosted in the algorithm. They're not trying to blast their message to more people. And on the flip side, if you're Adam Schefter, you don't need to be boosted in the algorithm because you're Adam Schefter. One way or another, people are going to get your message. The people who benefit from boosting their message are local media and, as you have mentioned, smaller national media.
I gotcha. I'd have zero interest in doing it. I hope that Brendan would just do it as a producer of the Killer Bees because he knows how important
it would be. I think you know local
be.
Media like I do that like it was like going to be like life-threatening if they didn't get a blue check mark back in the day.
7212, I'd pay 99 cents a month just so I could troll people. I'd have to download Twitter first. Keith says 0 cents. I have Twitters for years because of my job. I never tweet, retweet, or care. And then somebody's sending us a picture of a baby for some reason. 6181, in my opinion, you don't need a blue check mark unless it's for business purposes or if you're a social influencer. If you're an average Joe like the rest of us, there's no benefit to having a blue check mark. I agree. But if you're only looking at those for business purposes and social like media influencers, Elon Musk is going to make $10 million
a year. Bill Worrell had a big problem because Bill Worrell was never on Twitter, but someone created a Bill Worrell account.
Really?
And then they used to tweet, and people used to tag that account going, Bill Worrell thinks this, and Bill went to the legal department with the Rockets, and he couldn't get Bill Worrell. He had to get Rockets TV PBP.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and he was irate about it, and that's one where I don't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, you got to sell real estate on the metaverse, man. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. In case we missed it, every Wednesday at 2, the stories we've been wanting to talk about, just haven't been able to get to it. Well, in case we missed it, next, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.